Torah isn't education, it's transformation. This is Chai Chinuch with Rabbi G.
101.9 Chai FM, Chai Chinuch with Rabbi G. We are back, as we do every Monday at 11 o'clock, where we discuss every week a different topic, a different important discussion that we need to have about life, about the reality around us, about what we need to do in order to learn and achieve the mission of being the people we want to be, living in the world we want to live in. We always want to live in a better world and an educated world and a place that is a nice place, actually. And while we know the world is filled of difficulties, there are people that are actually working on making it a nicer place. And we're going to be talking to them today. So not only learning about the reality of the importance of the topic, which I'll say in a moment what it is, we're also going to be looking at the wider community and what we are doing. So yes, most of us are in holiday or just starting to go back or in holiday or going out to holiday, depends on your school. However, we need to remember the importance of eating, looking after ourselves physically, making sure food is available for our children, etc. And we're going to be speaking a bit about how our diets and our responsible eating affects us in school, affects us in our day-to-day life, and definitely what's out there for people who actually need that support to get that, and so much more. And we have quite a busy show with quite a few people here today, and we're going to start introducing one by one as we dive into our discussion. First, I'm going to say good morning and thank you for joining us to Nina Levitz. She is the founder of Bet on Better, which is an NPO. Good morning, Nina. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Morning.
Okay, a bit about you and your organization.
So we're a small organization that just believes in changing things one day at a time, one meal at a time. That if everybody does a little bit, it makes a difference to our community, the whole wider community. That it doesn't have to be a huge donation. It can be handing out sandwiches at street corners, can be helping at soup kitchens. Our work, we run quite a lot of early learning up in the Northwest. We deal a lot with the feeding programs in school and out of school, especially out of school now, because the children aren't being fed.
You're saying is that literally the situation? Kids are not being fed during holidays?
Literally, when school closes, that's their last meal they get.
Wow.
So,
well, that would have been if you didn't step in.
Yeah, so okay. We try and fill the gap because they go home, they rely on that food. At school, we have kids eating half a meal so they can take the other half home to their sibling. Who's not in school.
So we're going to talk about that and about the reality shortly. Let's say good morning and welcome our next guest, who I think has, you mentioned a small organization taking the world one day at a time. I think she has a bit of a bigger organization trying to take the world over maybe 1 hour at a time or immediately. So good morning to Jennifer Papers, who is the executive director of FAMSA, which is the Family Life Center. Thank you so much for being with us.
Good morning, Rabbi. Thank you so much.
So, Jennifer, a word about yourself and about the work you do in the organization.
Yeah, so like you said, FAMSA is not such a small organization. In fact, we are an umbrella brand, but FAMSA Johannesburg specifically, we're turning 77 years old this year, so we officially in our retirement stage, but working very hard still. But yes, we're an organization who was established in 1949, and our work with kids is very extensive. We do a lot of work in schools. That is our daily work. We reach around 100,000 and more kids every year. And yes, like Nanine said, feeding does become a major issue, especially when you're working with kids who come to you hungry. You're conducting a program, but they come hungry, and so it's important for us to feed them. And you would be surprised to know the number of kids we can feed in one day for one program. It could reach over 500 kids. So
500 kids, yes, a day in one program.
Yes. Wow. That's one program, one area. Yeah.
That's
and we
amazing
deal with
and
seven
scary
areas
at the same time.
Yeah.
How many programs do you have?
So we have a program called the Education for Living program, and under that program we have sub-programs that deals with puberty, relationship building, bullying, child sexual abuse. So we have a number of programs under that specific program, and then we have seven communities that we deal with. So we have Deep Sloot, which most of our kids actually come from, that is very hungry, and kids that just roam the street. Like now, we're dealing with holiday programs where the kids are at school, and part of that is to just keep them off the streets, keep them safe. As we know that trafficking in kids and abuse thrive. When it comes to those communities, we have Alexandra, which is another township, so where to? Lanesia South and Zachariah Park.
Wow.
Oh, and Westbury, sorry. Yeah.
Okay.
Westbury is another.
Wow. So that's a lot, and we'll see what we're going to be managing to talk about. We are going to be focusing a bit more about the food side of things and the importance and what's, as parents, we need to learn and understand. You know, you were speaking about the organization at the retiring age, but then right next to you we have a young project manager. This handsome young man here. Good morning. Thank you for joining us today. You are a project manager at FAMHSA. Mac, right?
Yes, Mac Wayne's my name. Thank you for having us.
A bit about your work.
Our work, what we do, actually, it's goes hand in hand with the kids, but on the side of the skills. Skills development, we're giving kids and adults and workplaces skills professionally, and also on the skills level of, I'd say, ground floor up to the technical side of things.
Okay, amazing. So you're more from allowing them to get jobs and helping them within the
definitely
work area.
Yes.
Okay. Saying in that regard, our next guest today on the show is Aleska Rich. She is she's a dietitian and the spokesperson for the Association of Dietitians in South Africa. Good morning, Aleska. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Good morning, everyone. Yes, very interesting and needed topic today. Dietitians play an important role in ensuring that everyone in South Africa has access to food as well. And we focus a lot on food insecurity and budgeting and things like that when we also see our patients. So I hope I can help you today.
Amazing. So Aleska, you heard the other people in studio here with me regarding their work. Where is the point of connection that is happening or should be happening between the Dietitians Association and between their work in ensuring kids in South Africa or people in South Africa have food?
Yes, so I think our job as an association is really just to represent and also be an advocate for dietitians in South Africa, because many dietitians are working in a government or an NGO setting, really trying their best to improve the overall variety of foods given in these amazing programs that we've heard of this morning, and also that you get all the different nutrients that you need while growing up and needing to learn and everything like that. So I think the connection there is that it would be amazing if dietitians didn't need to get money to survive each month, and we could just be involved and make sure that there are educated choices being made everywhere.
Okay. So so let's look at that reality. And I want to ask, you know, them from being on the ground, but, you know, there's the reality of lack of feeding and lack of food because of finances, because of ability. I'm wondering, not from that side so much, more from the awareness. And are the people actually aware of the importance and what needs to happen? But before we dive into the awareness and the reality of what we need to do, we're going to take a short break. And when we come back, we'll continue with that.
Torah isn't education. It's transformation. This is Chai Chinuch with Rabbi G.
101.9 Chai FM, Chai Chinuch, Rabbi G. We are back, and we started a conversation about eating, the importance, the relevance. We just started with kind of getting a feel of what's happening, and we are going to dive in a bit more. I just want to give one correction, because Nina, you said when we started that you're a small organization taking step by step, and then in the break I hear that you're feeding about minimum of 2,500 kids a day every morning, so I don't think you're still small, and well done to you. I do recognize that FAMSA is a huge organization, but still you're both amazing in your work. What I want to understand is more, besides for the reality, and I'll start with you, Jennifer, putting aside the reality of lack of food, which is something that we need to deal with, and you're dealing with it, and that's amazing. What is the awareness that parents have today about the, you know, the needs of their children, even if they can't supply it? Are they aware of the importance? Are they have a understand of an understanding of the connection between the food and functionality?
So I've mentioned the program that we run at schools, right? And part of the sub-program that we do is based on nutrition. So that is the education to the kids, but we also connect a lot with the parents when they come in for parent-teacher meetings. That is our opportunity to engage with them and share that. So yes, we do spread and share that knowledge and awareness. Because when we do look at the issue that we have, especially with, when you normally pick it up when the kid gets to high school, kids have a problem with reading in South Africa. And there is definitely a close connection to a child's ability to learn in class and them being hungry. If you look at an adult, your sugar levels drop completely if you've gone hungry for more than 4 or 5 hours. And so just imagine a kid being hungry for 8 hours a day at school. So there's a close link to a child underperforming at school, which is a huge issue that we do have in South Africa right now, and them not being fed. So yes, we do spread the awareness.
And people are getting, and people are aware, or you still need to find that?
I think, well, we are a very big organization, but I think it's important for other role players to come on board as well, because we can only spread so much information. So I think that it needs to be a big deal in terms of the role nutrition plays in a child's ability to grow physically and mentally as well as psychologically and yes, and learn, yeah.
It's very interesting because, Aleska, from your side, we generally speak about dietitians in the aspect of people that are eating too much. And here we're actually speaking to you from the opposite side of kids not eating enough or not eating well or not eating healthy. And that's an interesting balance that I'm not sure that dietitians in every country deal with. Some countries, potentially, the focus would be more on what not to eat than more what yes to eat. Do you see that double side role that you have coming to effect in our South African communities?
Yes, and research consistently shows that children who have regular access to nutritious meals generally perform better academically. So while there are many factors that influence school performance, adequate nutrition is one of the key foundations for making sure that you are learning. So another thing that we also need to think about is not just having food and concentration and sugar dropping and things like that, but also the influence this has on maybe their school attendance. Mm. Because when you don't have sufficient nutrients, you can become ill quite often, or maybe you arrive late, or you just overall are not as engaged in school activities. So it's really important that good nutrition supports the brain, especially in younger children. So we need all those nutrients like iron, zinc, protein, healthy fats, and those deficiencies can really make the child not be able to learn and process information.
Wow. So hearing that, I'm going to ask you, Nina, seeing the work you're doing, and you know, it's incredible that you are feeding that many kids and you are doing such amazing work. Do the organizations today, your organization, other organization, have the ability to not only supply the kids with food, but actually make sure that the nutrition values are in there. Speaking about zinc, speaking about everything that we need. You know, I remember about 10 years ago, there was a campaign was in Israel, and I saw a campaign over there, and it covered the whole country from side to side. It was in Hebrew. Yeled ra'ev lo lomed nekuda. A hungry child does not learn. End of discussion. And that was like a very aggressive campaign that there's no expectations for kids that are not eating. But are we able to supply also the right food, per se?
I do think we can supply the right food. We are quite passionate about where we're sourcing our food, what is going into it, how well we cook on fire.
Okay. What do you mean cook on fire? You come with a pot to the community?
So
tell us more. It sounds like a lot of fun.
Okay, so we have 5 cooking points. At 4 o'clock in the morning, they get up and they start the fire with wood. Then we have these huge, big poiki pots, which are probably cooking 20 kilos of ingredients.
Wow. Okay.
Most of our ingredients come from AGT Food, and they're very passionate about making sure the nutritional quality and everything there is good and nice and healthy.
You know, it's hard enough to get volunteers. How do you get volunteers that are there at 4 a.m. in the morning?
We've got exceptionally good community buy-in because they see the benefit to the children. They see us wanting the children to go to school.
Okay.
We're helping them with the schooling. We're helping with the vegetable gardens.
And so vegetable gardens meaning planting and becoming more dependent on themselves?
Being able to produce healthy food for themselves.
Wow.
We can't change the environment they live in. I mean, they're living in shacks without electricity, water, the basic human rights.
But that you are changing the environment, because when there's food, it's a different environment from when there's not food. And when there's vegetables growing, it's a different environment than when there's nothing growing.
And we can teach them to keep the environment clean and not to get sick in order to get them into schools. And when you work hand in hand with the schools, then we know which kids need to see doctors, which kids are on borderline of needing extra help.
And when you say extra help, do you go as far as therapies or
as far as our budgets can take us?
Okay, gotcha. Okay, you speak about the link between you and the schools. What about the link between you, the schools, and employment that comes with Max afterwards? Is there a link? How do we create that link?
So unfortunately, where we're working, we've got maybe 3 generations of illiterate people.
Okay.
So it's very difficult. So for us, it's just a matter of keeping them in school.
When you say literate, you mean in English or completely?
Completely.
Okay.
So for us, it's about keeping them in school, keeping them fed.
Okay.
And making sure that there's initiatives that they do, that they want to do these things, and that there's somebody they can go to. You know, the ripple effect, unfortunately, is kids go to dumpsters to look for food, and it's not out there. It's even here in Joburg.
Right.
And there's a misconcept about what people can do. They say, well, I'm not going to cook a meal and go deliver it because there's all these NGOs doing it.
We'll get there in a minute, because that's something that I speak a lot on the show about, that concept. So, but you see, you are doing quite a bit of holistic work. And if we look at FAMSA as well, it's very holistic. It's not only food, like maybe in the past it was just food, or maybe you're looking at working skills, at food, at management, at education, at, you know,
counseling,
etc. Where are we being held back from breaking through the cycle of the third generation? That, as Nina is speaking about 3 generations of illiteracy, how do we break through that?
So that's more on Max's side with the skills. So we work a lot with young people. Yeah, he's the expert. I try not to overstep.
Okay.
But we work a lot with young people, especially the kids or the young people, that comes from grade 12 struggling to get into university because they're not qualifying, and we don't want to stop them from reaching their potential simply because they can't get into higher education. So we do have skills and bursaries available as well for those who can't afford, but part of that is also feeding them, because we need to acknowledge that only because an adult comes to learn doesn't necessarily mean that they can feed themselves. So we also on our side need to make sure that they do have a lunch that we're able to offer them while they are coming to learn with us. So, yeah.
But where do we keep the boundary between feeding them and between teaching them how to grow food, how to manage their own food, etc.? Because it sounds like you're doing both.
Yeah, so they say don't feed a person to help them to fish. I don't want to say it the wrong way.
Give a fish, give a person a fish, he'll eat one day. Teach him how to fish, he will eat every day.
Yes, right. Yes. So we're not necessarily teaching like Nenin does, you know, teaching them how to grow a garden or anything like that, but we do offer them, we do go the extra mile to help them, to place them in a workplace, to be able to get a job and feed themselves. I think those things are important, just that background support in terms of giving them the skills, how to communicate, interview skills, how to do a CV, and then ultimately placement in a job, because I think a lot of the times that's the gap as well, where we provide the skills, but we're not assisting the person to get to the next level, to actually be placed in a job, and to make sure that they're able to feed themselves at the end of the day. Yeah.
Side of things.
Go ahead. Max?
No, I'm saying also what we do, again, is the issue of some of them we can tell that, you know what, they do have the skills and the knowledge, but they are really not people that they want employment. What we do is we have the entrepreneur side of things where we take them through the training, then we accredit them, then they can go ahead and open their own businesses. Recently, what we've been doing, we had ladies from disadvantaged background. Some of them, they are from abused relationships and shelters. So we put them together, we give them skills, and we also provide starter kits for them so they can be independent and start their own businesses. And on top of that, we don't only give them the starter kits, we also assist them in registering the businesses and how to write the winning proposal and.
Amazing. And, you know, I do believe we are watching the most difficult time and generation, because if you look 2, 3, 4 generations back, there was more of a family structure, community structure. Mm-hmm. Even if somebody was illiterate, there was a bit more of support. Mm-hmm. And the world is transforming and changing, and we're in that space of kids that are in, sometimes I could see kids that are in major poverty, but they have a smartphone, so they see everything out there in the world and the difficulty and you know, balancing the gap between, you know, just everything that happens there. Yet, is there motivation within our society to actually take matters in their hands? You know, speaking not long ago, one of the incredible people on the show who was actually part of the revelation at the time, he was speaking for Youth Day. He sat in jail with Mandela, and we spoke about the youth at his time, how they fought. And he was expressing his frustration that he feels like his grandchildren are not fighting for what they need, like they fought for what they need. What are you seeing?
Can I be honest?
Please do.
The motivation that we've come to experience since we're talking about food and nutrition is always food. If you say refreshments will be served, be guaranteed that you're going to have a room full and more. Because I think people are, should I say, hungry, more hungry in the stomach than hungry in terms of motivation for, like we had, that we want to learn. But we ate and food was not so scarce and it was not as expensive as it is now. So it was easier to buy a loaf of bread. Now people, at any event that they want to go to learn, they would prefer to come to learn with something that they are going to get in return, which is a plate of food or a slice of bread. So that is the motivation right now.
So how do we
generation.
Shift that? Because don't we want the motivation to be, how do I create a reality that I could buy myself as much food as I want,
yes,
instead of putting all my energy in getting food.
Yes, so that is what we are trying to shift in terms of what we are doing, to say, yes, you can eat only for this amount of time, but wouldn't you want to be independent to be able to feed yourself for a lifetime, feed your kids, your five kids or whatever the case may be. So that is the shift that we are trying to, and we are also still young, I believe, and so we're able to influence that in terms of mentoring and providing them with that detailed information to say, this is where you are at, but this is where you can be. And I think that is one of our greatest passions, which is mentoring young people. From we travel as far as Springs on a Saturday just to go and mentor kids in those townships that we partnered with another organization that we do every Saturday. So I think those things are also important for leaders to be able to make themselves available, you know, to mentor young kids and just help them to understand that this is where the world is at. Yes, smartphones and all the information is readily available on the palm of your hand, but yes, you need these skills to also get further than that.
Okay, so let's look at the other side. And Aleska, you are working also with clients and kids that are more privileged, more blessed, have more opportunity potentially. Are you seeing motivation over there to take ownership of their food, of their nutrition, of their ability to manage themselves well? Or we have an issue of motivation throughout the country? Aleska, before you answer, we do need to take a short break. And when we come back, I'll continue with you in this question exactly. Short break, and we will be right back. So,
Torah isn't education, it's transformation. This is Chai Chinuch with Rabbi G.
101.9 Chai FM, Chai Chinuch with Rabbi G. We are back. We're discussing a fascinating and important discussion about our society, our reality, what's happening in South Africa and our communities when it comes to food, the understanding of it, the responsibility of it, and hearing from Jennifer, who is the executive director of FAMSA, who said that motivation right now is really about the next meal and about getting food, not necessarily about the long-term plan and how to support myself. I asked you, Aleska, who works as a dietitian, but you're actually the spokesperson for the Association of Dietitians in South Africa. You, as a professional who sees across the board, you see the kids that are struggling and the kids that are more privileged and the kids that have more opportunity and less opportunity. What is the motivation with the kids that are not necessarily struggling and worrying about the next meal to actually take ownership and look after themselves from a health way?
Yes, so I think the environment that a lot of us are living in, even if we think about ourselves as individuals, is that it's very busy, it's very fast-paced, it's quite stressful, things like that. So a lot of times the reasons for not achieving health goals, or even the excuses sometimes given to not take better care of yourself, are a lot of times the barriers to change. So as dietitians, it's not really our role to judge or something like that, but really to help you to overcome those barriers. So if it is maybe that food is too expensive, or you don't have time to cook, or you're too busy to take a break and have a meal or have a snack, then it's really the dietitian's job to give you practical tips on how to overcome those barriers. So I definitely think overall there are lots of reasons why we maybe can't make the healthiest choice, but to see what we can do and what we can commit to start small and build on that. Because at the end of the day, if you don't take care of yourself, you're not going to be able to live the life you want and to embrace all the opportunities that are coming your way.
And that's okay, we're not judging. We're not going to be judging anyone and nothing. But if I walk out to the parking lot here with over 100 cars and a busy place, statistically at least 20 of the people driving cars here have apps on their phone to remind them to drink. And I ask myself sometimes, how do we come to this point that the basic human need, you say, oh, I need an app to remind me that I don't dehydrate myself and I don't die from thirst or harm myself. Like, how lazy are we going to be?
I don't always think that it's maybe laziness that is the problem. I think it's just that we are preoccupied with the wrong things. Success is measured by how much you can achieve or how much you can own, and not necessarily by taking good care of yourself. So shifting priorities, I think, is the biggest problem there. And I think all of those apps and tools and reminders and everything could be a way to actually help us overcome the barrier of not drinking water. But yeah, I don't think it's always just laziness. I think it's a combination of many little things that add up.
So I know that laziness is a triggering word, and I'm sure I'm going to get SMSs on this show and people not happy with what I said. And I don't mean from that regard of actually being lazy. But, you know, sometimes I sit with my kids and we try to imagine what my grandparents, their great-grandparents, would react to when they see us tired and drained and say, did you drink? And I'll say, well, I didn't have my phone with me, so I didn't know I needed to drink water, or something like that. There's a basic responsibility that we need to take on our physical being. And the systems are here to guide. And, you know, as dietitians, you do amazing work to guide, and the NPOs and the organizations. And I'm actually feeling very humbled sitting with you four and what you're actually doing for society. And yet I'm sitting worried in a way when I hear that if we don't have food, then that's our only focus. But yet if we do have food, then we forget to eat and we forget to drink and we forget to look after nutritions. And do we need to also guide the theory, the responsibility, the education, not only the practicalities?
Yes, no, definitely. And I think that's why all of us are here in the room as well, is because we truly have this passion to help those who cannot meet their needs, to send them on the right path and hopefully make a lot of different individuals in South Africa that also want to bring about change, because that's what we need. We need change, whether it's in a low socioeconomic background or in a high socioeconomic background. We need change in order to grow as the human race.
Okay. So I'm going to ask you, I don't know if Nina, if you want to answer this, or Jennifer, it's a sensitive question. You could both decide not to answer it. But is there a percentage of kids that you help and support and feed and counsel, etc., that within a few years you find them volunteering in your organizations to help the next generation?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yes.
What is that percentage?
For us, I think it's quite high, because we work a lot with the schools on their community service.
Okay.
And we encourage them to come out to the projects with us already from grade 10. We try to get the parents involved. So there isn't a thing of we don't know what to do, because we're showing you what to do. And it's a little bit you do that makes a difference. You still got to do community hours at varsity.
Right.
So it's about building a relationship with your volunteers from a very young age to try and keep them within the organization or to carry on and do something
on
their
own. And volunteers that don't need the hours?
They're the best volunteers.
But do you have?
We do.
Okay. By you as well?
Yes,
Jennifer.
Sure. We do take in many, many students, close to 100 every year. We work closely with UNISA and SACAP and with university. So yes, we do have also volunteers who just want to come and help out without the hours, and that's always great, and we do encourage that, and we ask that people out there who want to just occupy their time with doing something good and working with kids and people, please don't be shy to reach out to us. And also, just I always say that it does take for us a village, and that village includes, yes, volunteers, students, but also funders and donors and people who are able to contribute towards what we are doing. It's very important. We can't do it alone. I always say that, and even if we are as big as 100 years old, please do support us. And it's also easy these days. You can go onto your phone and just click a button. For example, your My School that Nainin mentioned off air. We are part of that with Woolworths. And so it's just you swiping your card when you go to the store. Add us as your beneficiary, mm-hmm. and the money comes mm-hmm. to us, and we're able to feed and do the programs and continue the work.
And I have to say that it is beautiful to see that you two work together, even though you have separate organizations. Sometimes I do find big programs a bit possessive, and to see that you are really investing and invested together, it's really good. So what I'm going to ask you is, I'm going to give you the opportunity to call out and say, what volunteers would you need? You say there's therapists, there's people that cook, there's people that organize workplaces. And if you would call out and say, we are short of volunteers in this area, if you are a psychologist, give us a call. If you are, what would that be? And give each of you the chance.
Yeah, so for us, it's not necessarily for you to be a professional in the field. Volunteers who's willing to work with kids, we train you because we provide training in any case. So we train you to be able to go out to schools. We need volunteers to help us fundraise. Fundraisers, please, if you're out there and you have a skill to fundraise, please come and assist us. We need you very much. And then our therapist, we also have an option of part-time work for therapists. You come out, you do the therapy, we give you a percentage of the work that you do. And so we grow as an organization and you also grow as a person, a professional, as a human being. Yeah.
And that's the problem. So Nina?
I think we also looking at, would say the main thing is volunteers to help fundraise, because that's an issue across all NGOs. I think it's important for us all to be working together in the times we're living, because things are expensive. And people need to just start cooking at home, feeding the people they see out there that are hungry. It's really something
and
simple.
And that's the one thing that I think is, you know, it's extremely important what you're saying, and we often speak about it. Sometimes we see so many organizations, and then when we see a person in need, we, instead of saying, okay, let me help what I can, we say, okay, they need to go to this and this organization. Mm-hmm. And we distance ourselves from our responsibility towards society. Mm-hmm. And that's our obligation. And the one thing we need to remember, that your work is not instead of everybody else's mm-hmm. responsibility. And we all have to do what we can do. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important that that call comes out from the organizations as well, because it's so often we say, okay, my neighbor's struggling, let them go too. But really, no, they can, but if I can help with something or a little, or let me do it, and let's be that kind of people and that nation. So I agree with that. And it doesn't have to be through an organization,
no,
as you said.
No, I mean, it's winter, it's cold. We all have extra clothes. We all have extra blankets. We all have leftovers after our meal. Help the people out there on the streets.
100%.
They need...
And I do see quite a bit of initiatives, I have to say. So it does seem like we have some understanding. We will take a short break, and when we come back, we're going to start heading towards the end of the hour and wrapping up this discussion.
Torah isn't education, it's transformation. This is Chai Chinuch with Rabbi G.
101.9 Chai FM, Chai Chinuch, Rabbi G. We are back at the end of a very important conversation. And if you haven't heard it or you're joining now, just go to our podcast. You'll hear it. It's important. You'll be informed. There's a lot we need to learn and see. I'm going to end off with a question. I'm going to ask each of you the same question. It's something that I've been asking for about a decade, every guest on this show. And that is, on a personal level. Okay, Mac, I'm going to start with you. But everybody's going to answer the same question. On a personal level, what do you wish and hope that we do different or know better for a better future for our society?
First things first, I'll think collaboration as organizations. It's very much important because, for instance, we find organizations that they're able to receive certain things, but they cannot be able to distribute. Instead, you'll find that all those things end up going to waste or no one is able to. With collaborations, we are able to come together. If you are unable to distribute, you call another neighbor, we'll do that. And also sharing of resources. You know, if my wish it will be where we can have one center where organizations can meet and be able to share as much resources as they can. You know, for instance, you'll find that we have organizations which that doing branding, but amongst the society, none of them knows who's who in the zoo, you know, so.
Like, I'm stopping you here. I don't say this often. We'll talk after the show. Let's make
Wonderful.
That happen. I actually think it's a very important, realistic thing. Yeah. We can and we should, and I've had quite a few organizations that we spoke about that idea, so 100%. Jennifer, what do you wish and hope we have?
So I'm agreeing with Mac. For me, it's less competition. We're all in the same sort of issue in this world, you know, of trying to survive and just also us wanting to help and, you know, partnering, collaborating with others, you know, like we with Nina and so many others as well. It makes it so much easier to reach and to save the world, to make the world a better place. We have to work together. We can't work in silos. And so that's my message. And if anyone listening out there as well wants to partner with us, wants to work with us, please don't be afraid to do that. Yes, it helps.
Okay. Nina, what do you wish and hope?
I wish and hope that more organizations would work together, that they would share their bounty of what they get and not stockpile, which is a reality.
And the collaboration of working together.
And by just feeding children, we can keep them in school. Mm-hmm. If we can keep them in school, we can change the world.
Incredible. Aleska, what do you wish and hope we have?
I truly just wish that the same as everyone else, that we can work together. But I also hope that we see growth and we see change in South Africa.
Please God. And we will, by pushing all together, that should come across. We do have to end and wrap up. Jennifer, anybody want to be in contact with FAMSA or drop off things, how do they reach out to you?
So drop off for non-perishables, clothing items, blankets, stationery. Please, we need that. It's at number 1 Cardigan Road, Parkwood, Randburg, Johannesburg, 21933. You can also email us at intake@familylife.co.za and our website, www.familylife.co.za. Please follow us on our socials. You see all the work that we do there as well.
Okay, great. Nina?
I think the same. Email us, betonbetter@betonbetter.co.za. We are on Facebook, we are on Twitter, we have a website. Just reach out to us on social media and you'll find us.
You'll find.
And drop-off points, we've got a few drop-off points.
Okay, so you'll find that on social media, Bet on Better. Okay, thank you so much for being with us. We're running out of time. I don't know how much credit I could even manage, but Nina, Jennifer, Mac, and Aleska, thank you so much for being with us today. Really, really important work you're doing, and I look forward to continuing this discussion, and we'll have a little chat off air as well. Thank you, Senna, for putting the interviews in place. Thank you, Craig, for managing the show perfectly, as always. And thank you to our listeners that are here week after week. Stay tuned and join many more shows throughout the week, and we will be back next Monday at 11 o'clock. Enjoy your break if you are on. Eat, look after yourself, and stay safe.